Welcome to the Portland Christian Center podcast. This week, Pastor Ray Noah continues our series, Ridiculous Generosity, with a message titled, Kingdom Principles. Now here's Pastor Ray.
All right. You know, some of you really, really enjoy this fellowship time, and you take full advantage of it. And then some of you are going, will they ever get done with that? Anyway, thank you for being a friendly bunch today. You know, we are in a series called Ridiculous Generosity, talking about generosity. So if this is your first time here, you're going, oh, great, they're going to talk about money. Ridiculous Generosity, that is our series. And today, I think it's time for me to make a very strong appeal. I've not done this yet, but I feel led to do it today. And I want to make my appeal to all of the rich people in the room today, to everyone who is wealthy today. And here is the appeal that I'm going to make in the strongest way I know how. Be generous. To all the rich people in the room, be ridiculously generous. You know, the Apostle Paul, in training and mentoring his protege Timothy, said as much in 1 Timothy chapter 6. He was teaching Timothy how to raise up disciples and how to pastor his church. And he said, listen, here's what I want you to tell them. And he gave them a bunch of things that he needed to do to train his church in the right way. And in verses 17 through 19, and I'm going to read this from the Message version of the Bible. He said this to Timothy, tell those rich in worldly wealth not to be so self-focused and so obsessed with money. It's here today, but gone tomorrow. Rather, they should be obsessed with God, who gives unbelievable riches, and to be ridiculously generous in helping others. If they do that, they will build a treasury that will last, gaining life that is truly life. So to all of the rich people in the room today, be ridiculously generous. Now, I know what a bunch of you, maybe most of you, are thinking. You're going, you're talking to the guy next to me. That's not me. So obviously, this one is not for me. Well, not so fast. According to the Global Rich List, you can look this up. According to the Global Rich List, just go online and you'll find it. It's a serious website. If you make $30,000 a year, family income, if you make $30,000, by the way, just to set the context, in Oregon, the median family income is just a tick over $51,000 a year. Okay? Now, as far as states go, we're kind of down on the list. We're not a real wealthy state. But if you make less than that, if you make $30,000 a year annually, you are in the top 1%, the top 1% of the world's wealthiest. You are those 1%ers that our politicians are talking about. If you make $30,000 or above, you are in the top 1% of the world's wealthiest. And even if you are still a millennial still living in your mom's basement, and you make only $2,000 a year selling stuff on Craigslist, guess what? You are still richer than 80% of the rest of the world. Do you know that? If you make $2,000 a year, you are in the top 20% of the world's wealthiest. And the fact, whether you make $30,000 or $2,000 or whatever you make, the fact that you don't see and celebrate the incredible wealth that you already have tells me that you really need this series on ridiculous generosity. We are incredibly wealthy, friends. We really are. No matter what you have or what you don't have, we are incredibly blessed by the Lord. And He's called us to be ridiculously generous. You are incredibly wealthy, and ridiculous generosity is your kingdom calling card. It's what distinguishes you as a child of God. You are made in His image. His DNA is generosity, and He has made you to be a generous person. He's called you to generous living, and it is your calling card to the world. And furthermore, and this is what I want to focus on in this message today, furthermore, being generous is incredibly self-benefiting. Not just because God is generous, He wants you to be generous, not just because of what it can do in the world, and it can do a lot, but it is incredibly self-benefiting. I want to give you some ways and some reasons for that. So first of all, why is it so self-benefiting? Well, first of all, generosity is good for your body. Really? Generosity is good for your physical body. It's true. Every time you're generously giving, it is improving your physical health. You're going, where did you get that? In the Bible. Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 through 10, tells us that as we put our trust in the Lord, the famous verse in that context is, trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding, in all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths. And one of the things that goes on to state is that you demonstrate your total trust in the Lord by your tithing. Read it in verses 9 and 10. Bring the first fruits, the best and the first part of your income, your tithe to the Lord, and then He will bless you. And that's in that same context. The highest level of trust, the truest demonstration of your trust in the Lord is your giving to the Lord, is your, in this case, your tithing to the Lord. But it says that as you put your total trust in the Lord, including your money, He will see to it that your body is lean and mean with a healthy sheen. You think I'm kidding. Proverbs 3:8 says this, your body will glow with health and your bones will vibrate with life. It's true. So go ahead, tithe, and then eat a deep fried Twinkie. It's good for you. It's good for your body. Seriously, when you emulate the character of the divine giver and honor the generosity seed that He has implanted within you, He will bless you with physical well-being. His promise and not mine. He will bless you with physical well-being. Now, does that mean that you'll never, ever, ever get sick? Does that never, ever mean that you won't have a disease, that you won't contract something, that you will never die? I'm not saying that. That's God's business. That's your journey with God, not mine. This is a general promise that He has made, that He will cause your bones to vibrate with life. You'll look healthy. You will be healthy. That's why you feel better. You are better physically after giving your money, your time, your talents, your emotional support, whatever it is you give, you feel better. And you are better. Proverbs 11:25 says, the generous will prosper. Those who refresh others will be refreshed. You know, the world is now discovering what God has already stated in His Word. I read two or three studies this week, and one in particular that I want to quote. I'll give you the source to it after church if you want it. But this is a secular study, not Christian-based at all, and the one that I'm focused on was a kind of a conglomeration of studies on the benefits of being generous, right? And so one of those studies pointed out the physical benefits that come from being a generous person. Again, not a Christian study at all, but this is what they said. They said that when you're a generous giver, when you live with a spirit of generosity, it will literally actually lower the cortisol levels in your body. Cortisol is a stress hormone that has been linked to any number of diseases, and it actually lowers cortisol in your body. So I'm going to ask for the ushers to come, and I'm kidding. Oh, okay, I guess I will, right? Some of you are really stressed out, and you just need this right now. They also have found that the people who live with a spirit of generosity are less likely to die a premature death. Seriously. So give. Be a generous giver. It feels good. I mean, literally, it feels good. It is good for your body. Well, not only that, but generosity is good for your soul as well, body and soul. Generous giving produces soul prosperity. Generosity produces soul prosperity. 3 John chapter 1, verse 2. There's only one chapter in 3 John. 3 John 1, 2 says, the Apostle John says, that I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health, just as your soul prospers. Now, I want you to know, I said it last week and I want to say it again, that I am not teaching this series because I need your money. Neither does God. He less than me. He doesn't need your money. I don't need your money. This is not about me getting bigger offerings and getting a raise and having more staff and doing this or that. That is not what this is about at all. But both God and I want your soul to be more free than it is. And generosity is the pathway for soul prosperity. Soul prosperity. Obviously, generosity includes money. It includes material things. But as I said last week, this is about a mindset more than it is about money. This is about a mindset. It's about being ridiculously generous with love, with encouragement, with forgiveness, with your time, with everything else, with whatever you possess, both materially and non-materially, that you become generous with that. And as you do, your soul will thrive. Your soul will begin to prosper like never before. And that will free you up on the inside. Some people are bound up on the inside. Some people are bound up emotionally. This will free you up to enjoy the blessings of God fully, more fully in your life. The study that I referred to a moment ago also tied generosity with less stress, less anxiety, lower depression. They found marriages were better, significantly better. They found a higher degree of happiness in the people that they studied in this research. Their souls prospered. Well, you know, Jesus knew this way before the social psychologist came along. And that's why he said in Acts chapter 20, verse 35, it is more blessed to give than receive. Say that with me. It is more blessed to give than receive. The Greek word for blessed is the word makarios. And it not only meant blessed, but it literally meant hilariously happy. To be hilariously happy, it is more hilarious. You're more happy when you give than when you receive. So if you want inner health and inner happiness, if you want to be a happy person, then learn to be generous. If you want to be a grump, then just don't do it. If you want to be internally happy, healthy in your soul, become ridiculously generous. It's good for your body, it's good for your soul, and third, generosity is good for your spirit. Body, soul, and spirit. In Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 33, we have some of the most expansive teaching that Jesus ever gave. In fact, it's some of the most expansive teaching in the Bible on generosity and giving. And I don't have time to unpack it all. This in itself would make a good sermon. It would make a great sermon series. But Jesus teaches about the spiritual benefits, the benefits to your spirit of generosity. And as you go through that passage, and I would encourage you to go home and read this and do this little study yourself, but Jesus talks about the spiritual benefits of generosity, and that would include storing up treasure in heaven. Not physical treasure on earth, but you stockpile spiritual treasure in heaven when you're a generous person. And when you do that, then back on earth, you're storing up treasure in heaven, but back on earth, that in itself is purifying your spirit. There's spiritual purification. When you have your treasure up there, then you're going to invest in the things that lead to a pure spirit down here. Beyond that, then, treasure in heaven, purified spirit, you will then enjoy protection from worry and anxiety. Jesus talks about that. And then as you get to the end of that passage, Jesus talks about how that will be the open door to divine abundance in your life. Divine abundance, not just material things, but a prospering life. There are spiritual benefits to being a generous giver. But one particular benefit that I think is a vital important that we don't often talk about is from verse 24, where Jesus says that this will give you freedom from the God of mammon. Freedom from the God of mammon. Verse 24, no one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Or as some translations render it, you cannot serve both God and mammon. It breaks the hold of mammon in our lives as we learn to be generous to the things of God. Now, theologians debate whether Mammon was literally an ancient god or not. Some say, yeah, it was an ancient god that was worshipped. Others say, no, it wasn't. It's just a reference to money and material things. Well, I don't know. I don't know where to line up on that. I don't think that's the main point here. But at the very least, and at the worst, Mammon is a spirit. Mammon is a spirit that is alive and active in the world today. From the beginning until Jesus comes back, the spirit of Mammon will be active in people's lives. It's the most deceitful and destructive of all the spirits under the command of the evil one. If it is a demon, it's got to be his chief demon. If it is a spirit, a literal spirit, it's got to be the most powerful, influential spirit in Satan's arsenal, the god or the spirit of Mammon. And right now, in this room, in your life, a battle rages between God's spirit, which is generosity, and the evil spirit of Mammon. And your flesh has to choose daily, sometimes hourly, maybe even moment by moment. Your flesh has to choose between two opposing forces, greed and generosity. That's the battle that we all face daily, hourly, moment by moment. Greed and generosity will battle it out in your life until the day they put dirt over you. Until the day they close the casket on you, there will be this battle in your life between greed and generosity. And by the way, it was there from the very beginning of time, as well as the very beginning of your life. The day you were born, that influence, that battle began to rage between Mammon and God, between generosity and greed. You don't believe me? Then just take a turn in the nursery. Go serve the toddlers. Watch them in the play area. Watch what they do. What will they say? No, it's mine. I mean, it starts early on. I've witnessed this in my grandson, Noah. I don't know if I've told you about Noah before, but he is just a delight to me. Now I've got two of them, Nathan and Noah. They're just amazing little boys. And Noah's love language is Disney Pixar Cars. And in particular, he likes Lightning McQueen. And he has probably 10 different versions of Lightning McQueen. And it is an addiction, and I feed that addiction shamelessly. I have been banned by my daughter and my son-in-law from bringing any more gifts, but I do it anyway. I love it. And as soon as I show up at their house or Noah comes to ours, you know what the first thing he says? Hey, Papa, let's play Cars. And so we play Cars. Oh, it's so fun. I mean, I had girls in my family. I played Barbies. Sorry. I am having so much fun playing Cars. And just to test this out, every time after we play for a while, I will say, hey, Noah, you got so many of these Lightning McQueens. How about if Papa takes one of these? What does he say? No, Papa, they're mine. I gave them to him for crying out loud. And I'm going to keep on till he learns to be generous. But that's what he says. Even though I gave them to him, I bought them, I gave them to him. He says, no, Papa, they're mine. Well, how do you think Papa God feels when we say, no, Papa, it's mine? When we're not open-handed, when we're not generous, when the offering trays go by and we go, I'm not going to do that. Let other people do it. Tithing isn't New Testament. I don't need to do that. I don't have enough. I can't. This is mine. How do you think Papa God feels? He says, for crying out loud, I gave that to you anyway, and I'll give you more. I want you to learn to be generous with your stuff. Your money, your material, your time, your talent, everything. I want you to learn to be generous because I have more where that comes from, but you've got to give it away so that I can give you more. And as you give it away, you will have more than enough. That's just the way I work. See, the spirit of Mammon, the strong spirit of Mammon, perpetuates the lie that happiness can be purchased and then held in our possession. We hold it to ourselves. We hold it in our financial accounts. We get it, and we hold on to it. We can't give it away. We can't lose it. We've got to keep it. Listen, in a lot of different areas, it's the same spirit. That's the spirit of mammon. And it's a lie. It's a delusion. It's the strongest lie that I know of in the world today. Back in 1928, a group of the world's most successful financiers met in Chicago. This is 1928. You understand the context there? The crash, the Wall Street crash that set afoot the Great Depression that lasted for a lot of years was to take place. Well, these icons of business and banking and media and government met in Chicago. Collectively, these people, these men, controlled more wealth at that time than was in the entire U.S. Treasury. I mean, that was how wealthy they were. Their success stories were held up as examples for the young people of America to emulate. Be like this guy. Be like that guy. Go after that. They were the wealthiest of the wealthy. 25 years later, let me tell you the end of the story. Charles Schwab, who was the president of Bethlehem Steel, at the end of his life, 25 years later, lived on borrowed money and died broke. Arthur Kooten, who was a wheat speculator, died broke in a foreign country, insolvent. Other guy that was there, Richard Whitney, who was the president of the New York Stock Exchange, served time in Sing Sing prison. Albert Fall, who was a member of the president's council, was pardoned from prison so he could die at home. Jesse Livermore, who was a Wall Street bear, killed himself, committed suicide, as did banker Leon Frazier and financier Ivar Kruger. They died broke and miserable. They had been deluded by the god of mammon. The wealthiest of the wealthy had been deluded by the god of mammon. They'd learned how to make and keep money. They hadn't learned to make and give money away. And they died broke and miserable. They hadn't learned to make it and give it away. But you can. But you can. Your generous giving will be a victory over the god of mammon, over the god of money and materialism. It will put the spirit, the god, the philosophy, the influence of mammon under your foot, where you will crush it. Learning to be generous will do that. So how do you get? How do you gain? How do you develop? How do you maintain a spirit of ridiculous generosity? Well, I'm going to give that to you. To begin with, you start with where you are. It's important to know. How do you become a generous person? How do you live out a spirit of generosity and not a spirit of scarcity? You just start with where you are. In Exodus chapter 4, verse 2, Moses is resisting the call of God to give himself, to generously give himself to the people of Israel as their deliverer. And he has all of these reasons why he can't do it. I'm not good enough. I'm not educated enough. I'm not talented enough. I'm not enough. And finally, a little bit exasperated, read the story. God says to Moses, Moses, use what's in your hand. That's all I'm asking you to do. Use what's in your hand. Release it to me and watch what I do. In the New Testament, Matthew chapter 14, there are 5,000 people that are hanging out with Jesus, and they're hungry. They've been listening all day. They're hungry, and Jesus says to the disciples, boys, we got to feed them. He says, what do you got? And they say, all we have, all we found here is 5 loaves and 2 fish. And what did Jesus say? Use what's in your hand. Feed them with what you've got. The point is, whatever you've got, that's where you start. Whatever you've got, that's where you start. You use your time, your talent, your treasure. You give away your love, your friendship, your encouragement, your forgiveness. Whatever you have, that's where you start. And you open your hand and say, God, use this. open your hand and do what you can. How do you become a generous person? Open your hand and do what you can. There's a legend told of a great warrior who was on a beautiful steed, very impressive man, a very impressive horse, and he was riding down the road, and everyone got out of his way. Well, this is an important guy, get out of his way. The crowd would just part, and everyone would scatter, and this guy just proudly rode down the road until he came to a point, and he just stopped dead in his tracks because there was one who wasn't getting out of his way. Directly in his path, in the middle of the road, was a sparrow, and the sparrow wasn't moving. In fact, the bird was just lying on its back, his feet stuck straight up in the air. And so this great warrior prince stopped his steed, he dismounted, and he went over to the sparrow to find out what was going on, and he asked the little bird, he said, "Are you dead? And if you're not, what are you doing in the road with your feet in the air?" The bird answered, "No, I'm not dead, but I heard that the sky might be falling, and I was trying to hold it up. I want to hold it up." Well, the warrior began to laugh until he cried, and he wiped his tears out of his eyes, and he said, "Silly bird, even if the sky fell, what difference could you possibly make with those puny little legs of yours?" And the sparrow said, "Hey, man, you do what you can do." You do what you can do. What difference can I make? Listen, do what you can do. You're going to have to think about that story a little bit. Generous living begins here. We open up our hands and we do what we can because a little in the Lord's hands becomes more than enough. When we place our little in the Lord's hands, it becomes more than enough. So start with where you are, and then don't be intimidated by what you don't have. You're saying, "I don't have much. I don't have wealth. I don't have a bank account. I don't have a business. I don't have this and that. I'm not talented. I'm not educated. I'm not winsome. I don't have a lot." Listen, don't be intimidated by what you don't have. In Luke chapter 21, it's a great story, verses 3 and 4. Jesus was at the temple one day, and he was watching people put money in the offering. I mean, he was watching people, and he started commenting on it. How would you like if the ushers commented on your offering every Sunday? Well, Jesus was like doing a running commentary on this stuff. And he saw the rich people putting in their offerings, and then he saw a widow woman come by, a very poor widow woman, and she put in 2 coins into the offering. And this is what he said. He said, "This poor widow has put more than all the others." She's put in more than all the others. "They gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in all that she had to live on." She didn't have much, but that didn't intimidate her. She gave what she had. My mentor, you've heard me talk about Charles Blair, was 84 years old when the president of the Benishango Gumuz region in far western Ethiopia, very primitive region, unreached, there were only 5 churches in this area that was about the size of the state of West Virginia, landmass-wise, contacted Charles Blair, President Yeragala Shishim. Found Charles Blair, found his little organization. I was a part of it. And he said, "I want to plant 1,000 churches in my region. I'm the only Christ follower in my government, and I only have 2 years left, and I want to plant 1,000 churches in the 3,000 villages that I have in my region, because if I plant 1,000 churches, I know that those 1,000 will reach the other 2,000, and my region will come to know Christ. Would you help me?" Now, he had been to all of the Ethiopian denominations with the same request, and they all said, "That's a great idea, President, but we can't help you. We don't have the resources to do that." And someone, as he had gone from place to place to place, had said, "You need to go talk to this guy, Charles Blair." We had a little office in Ethiopia at the time, and so he found our office, and he contacted Blair. Blair flew over to Ethiopia to meet with this guy, and President Ashishim said, "Would you do 1,000 churches in my region?" Blair's 84 years old, and he says, "Sure, why not?" So Blair gets on the airplane to fly back home, and he's 35,000 feet over the Atlantic, and it hits him, what have I committed to doing? I don't have any money. I don't have a church anymore. I don't have a plan. I'm 84 years old. What in the world am I going to do? And so he began to pen a letter at 35,000 feet. He began to write a letter to President Ashisham. And he began to talk to him. He began to explain to him all the things that he didn't have to do this project. And in mid-letter, Charles said the Lord spoke to him and stopped him and said, Charles, I didn't ask you to use what you don't have. Use what you have. What do you have, Charles? And Charles said, Lord, all I got now are friends. All I have is friends. And the Lord said, then use your friends. Tell your friends and watch what I do. Just tell your friends and watch what I do. So Charles came back, and I guess I was his only friend. He called me up, and I said, that's a great idea. Let's do it. And then we did have more friends than that. So we called other friends together, and we told them the story, and we said, would you help us? And together, we began to plant churches without any money whatsoever. We just used what we had. He used what he had. And now, almost 15 years later, we have planted close to 5,000 churches. I worked with Charles. We planted 1,000 churches in Benishango, Gumuz. Charles passed away. We finished up our work there. Had left at that point 1,300 churches. It has now grown probably to at least 2,000 that we could figure out. Charles passed away. I started the Petros Network. We've continued the projects in a different part. We've refined it and doing different things now. But in the last couple of years, the last 5 years, you know the story. We've planted another 2,000 churches. It just continues to mushroom and grow and grow and grow. 500,000 people have come to know Christ that had not heard of the true Jesus Christ before, that have given their lives to him. They're being discipled in these village churches that were in unreached villages. Close to 3 million people, maybe more, have heard the gospel proclaimed. Go into all the world and preach the gospel. That was our assignment. Because someone said, I'll use what I have. I won't be intimidated by what I don't have. And I want to ask you this morning the same thing that the Lord asked Charles. What do you have that the Lord can use? What do you have? Don't be intimidated by what you don't have. What do you have? The Lord wants to use that. What do you have in terms of love to give away? What do you have in terms of talent and time? What do you have in your capacity to forgive people, to restore people? What do you have in terms of your money? It's more than enough. Whatever it is more than enough for generosity. It's more than enough. So start with where you are. Don't be intimidated by what you don't have. And then finally, whatever you do give, do it joyfully. Whatever you have, whatever you give, whatever you open your hand to the Lord, give it away joyfully, because that is the catalyst for God to bless it. That's the catalyst for God to anoint it and multiply it. 2 Corinthians 9, 7 and 8 speaks of how joy is a catalyst for generosity, and then generosity is a catalyst for more joy. Paul says, God loves people who love to give. God loves people who love to give. God loves a cheerful giver, right? And he'll bless them with everything they need, and they'll always have more than enough to do all kinds of good things for others. Interestingly, I already said this, I believe, but one of the Greek words here for giving is the same word that's used for hilarious. Giving and hilarious, giving and happy, giving and joy. If we truly understood what God does for us when we're ridiculously generous, we would become hilarious givers. We wouldn't just clap at offering time. We would howl with laughter. We would dance for joy. Now, I'm not suggesting that you do that. I think we stretch it a little bit in terms of the weirdness factor when we're clapping at offering time. You know, people that are coming in for the first time are going, what? That's weird. So I'm not suggesting that you do anything more than that. Just do a little happy dance on the inside. Because it's a catalyst. That's a catalyst for generosity. And generosity is a catalyst for joy. Cheerful giving unleashes God's generosity. Cheerful giving unleashes God's generosity. And God's generosity unleashes unbridled joy. It's a joyful cycle of generous giving. You give and you get joyful. You get joyful and you give, and it just continues the cycle. And the more you give away, the more God gives you to give away. It's just a law of the kingdom. Now listen to me. The happiest people in all the earth are generous givers. Whatever it is they're giving out, the happiest people on earth are generous givers. Perhaps you've heard the name of Sir John Templeton. He founded the Templeton Prize, if you're aware of that, Templeton Prize, which recognizes people for their spiritual achievements. And he set up the foundation to award monetary gifts for people that were recognized for spiritual achievement, advancement, because he wanted to outdo the Nobel Peace Prize. And so the gift that's given for the prize, the reward, is always more, it's always a little bit more than the Nobel Peace Prize. He felt that that was overemphasized to the underemphasis of spiritual accomplishment, spiritual achievement in the world. And Templeton made this observation. He said, I have observed 100,000 families over my years in investment counseling. I always saw greater prosperity and happiness among those families who tithe than those who didn't. I've counseled 100,000 people, this guy, this financier said. And the ones that are the happiest, the ones that are the most prosperous, are the families, the ones who have learned to tithe. So, why be generous? It's good for you, body, soul, and spirit. It makes you feel better. It ennobles your soul, and it defeats the god of greed, and it opens up the floodgates of happiness within you. So again, this week, as I did last week, I want to challenge you. I preached about it last Sunday. We closed the service with this. I emailed you to remind you of this. I'm passionate. I believe in this, so I'm going to challenge you again with the very same thing. I'm going to give you some steps to practice generosity. Give an extravagant gift of money to one of our strategic missional partners. I'm not asking you to give an offering for us, for the church. We do that regularly anyway. We're not going to receive an offering today, but I'm going to ask you to pray about giving an extravagantly generous gift of money to one of our missional partners, our Petros Network's child care program, Teen Challenge, Convoy of Hope, which is now, you know, stepping into where Hurricane Matthew hit. I mean, we have a lot of wonderful partners, and if God prompts you, then give a generous gift. If you got $2, maybe that generosity is just $1. You know, if it's $20,000, you know, whatever it is, let the Lord speak to you and be generous with our missional partners. Then I'm going to offer extravagant forgiveness to someone who has hurt you. That's generosity. Someone who has wounded you, just forgive them. That doesn't mean you have to have a reconciled relationship. That doesn't mean that it can be restored automatically. I'm not talking about that. But you can forgive them. You can release them through forgiveness. That's generosity. Offer forgiveness to someone who has hurt you. And then finally, show extravagant love to someone who does not expect it or deserve it. God is placing someone in your mind's eye right now, and he's saying, I want you just to love them and love them extravagantly. You be generous with what you have been given, and God will release generosity back to you.
Thanks again for listening to this week's edition of the Portland Christian Center podcast. If you want more information about the ministries of Portland Christian Center or have a prayer need, please visit us online at pcctoday.com. Thanks for listening.